Welcome to day two of the 2018 Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft. I'm David Locke, your commissioner, your host of the NBA Mock Draft. For those of you who missed day one, it is on your iTunes podcatcher or at Locked On NBA or LockedOnSports.com. Each team is represented by their Locked On Podcast Network host. Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated will give us his analysis of every player drafted. Locked On NBA hosts Josh Lloyd and Jake Madison will stop by to evaluate what's taking place on all of the picks. Today on the docket, Chicago, Cleveland, New York, Philadelphia, Charlotte, and the Clippers. Though we're hearing there's heavy trade talk taking place involving both Chicago, possibly New York, Utah's working toward getting the 11th pick, and the Clippers are evidently in deep talks with Dallas. We'll see whether any of those deals come to fruition. The Locked On Podcast Network has a podcast for each and every team in the NBA. So your favorite team is represented by a daily, bite-sized, 30-minute podcast that you can subscribe to on iTunes or whatever you use to get your podcast at Locked On, whoever your favorite team is. And there's a corresponding website as well. With six players already off the board, Luka Doncic went number one to Phoenix in a surprise. DeAndre Ayton went number two to Sacramento. Jaren Jackson, third to Atlanta. Trey Young jumped up to fourth from Memphis. Dallas took Mo Bamba, five. And Orlando went to Wendell Carter Jr., sixth. That means with the seventh pick of the draft, the Chicago Bulls are on the board. Marvin Bagley, Michael Porter Jr., Kevin Knox, some big names, are all available. We'll see where the Bulls go. But first, let me remind you, for all of your Locked On Podcast Network information, go to LockedOnSports.com. Now, we head into the draft headquarters of the Chicago Bulls for the seventh pick of the 2018 Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft.
What's up, Locked On NBA fans out there? This is Jordan Malley, and alongside with me is Matt Peck. We are the hosts of Locked On Bulls, and we are on the clock for the number seven pick. Matt, some interesting scenarios going on in this mock draft already. Trey Young being taken by the Grizzlies at number four, and Wendell Carter taken at number six. Those are two guys that I know we've talked extensively about potentially being there at number seven, but now that both of those guys are off the board, Mo Bamba's off the board at number five, that leaves Marvin Bagley sliding down all the way to number seven. So we have a very interesting scenario here. Marvin Bagley, Mikal Bridges, Michael Porter Jr. Let's start with this. What's the biggest need you think between as Bulls fans would know it and as the Bulls front office looking at this team, what do you think is the biggest need here?
John Paxson said it on NBA draft lottery night, and he said it after the season ended. It was a versatile player at the wing, a 3-and-D wing. And Marvin Bagley sliding all the way to seven is definitely a big shock, and he is sitting right there for the taking, but he is not that biggest need. And it's the boring pick, and Bulls fans don't want a boring pick. But if you're talking about what Paxson said this team needed, Mikal Bridges is that guy.
Yeah, I think as far as biggest need goes, too, and I want to remind everybody out there that the Bulls do have a pick at number 22 as well in this first round. So as far as need, John Paxson also said they're going to take the best player available at number seven. So that brings us to one of the questions. What's the dream scenario for our team here? What was the best possible outcome? And I feel like it's sitting right here in our hands between Mikal Bridges, Michael Porter Jr., or Marvin Bagley.
Yeah, I mean, maybe some Bulls fans and the Bulls execs who did meet with Mo Bamba as part of their number of rookie meetings and workouts that they had in Chicago over the past couple of weeks. Maybe some would say that they're higher on Mo Bamba at this point than they are on Marvin Bagley, and that he fits better in that Bulls front court alongside Lauri Markkanen, who really at this point is the only staple and cornerstone of this Bulls rebuild moving forward. So the dream scenario, as we thought it, was going to be the Dallas Mavericks taking the chance on Michael Porter Jr., and Orlando snagging Trey Young so that Mo Bamba would be there for the Bulls to take at seven. And we had, as you said, some surprises. Trey Young going early, Wendell Carter going early, but Mo Bamba did get taken. But rewind a year, if Bulls fans were told, all right, we're picking seventh, probably later than we thought, but hey, we can still get Marvin Bagley at seventh, that probably right there is the dream scenario, wouldn't you say?
I would definitely agree. And we talked about this extensively about how the Bulls felt about Marvin Bagley early on in the season. And they thought, without a doubt, at the time, if the Bulls were going to be in the top three, Marvin Bagley was surely going to be on the top of the Bulls list. So I feel like in a dream scenario, Marvin Bagley falling to number seven is the perfect opportunity for the Bulls to take the guy with the highest upside and also the potential, you know, best player available at number seven, the way John Paxson has said that. We did have some trade possibilities. We had some talks with the Dallas Mavericks at number five. If we did like Mo Bamba, I think you and I can both agree that Mo Bamba was probably number one on our list because we weren't even thinking about Marvin Bagley being available here at number seven. We'd had some talks with them. The Dallas Mavericks guys, they are the nicest guys in the world, but they're absolutely insane if they thought we were going to trade up our number seven pick, our number 22 pick, Bobby Portis for number five and Dwight Powell. They're absolutely insane because both you and I know we are very high on Bobby Portis and we feel like he is going to be an asset for the future and love his game. And I just, there's no way the Bulls are giving up that much just to move up two spots to take Mo Bamba, especially if Marvin Bagley falls here at number seven.
Yeah, and I think that's something you and I have talked about ad nauseum on Locked On Bulls, that Bulls fans keep asking, like, well, how and why can we trade up? Like, how can we make it happen? We got to trade ourselves back into the top three, at least the top four, to get the guy we really want. And when you're talking about trades, guess what? It takes two teams to make a trade happen, and they have to agree. And we had some talks with Dallas. They fell through because they thought that, you know, they wanted more. To move down out of that five spot, and the Bulls, and, you know, and I think the Bulls office, the Bulls front office would say the same thing. No, that's too much. So don't see eye to eye on a trade. But really, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bulls say, "Hey, I'm not too sad about not being able to trade up. We got Marvin Bagley at seven, and we didn't think that would
happen." So with all that in mind, the Chicago Bulls at number seven select Marvin Bagley III from Duke University. Once again, the Bulls have a pick at number 22, so stay right here with us at Locked On NBA. We'll be back at the number 22 pick to discuss a little bit more about who might be the fit now that we have selected Marvin Bagley at number 7 and who might be the fit at number 22. Thanks for listening to us at Locked On Bulls. You can always follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck.
I would think Bulls fans have to be pretty ecstatic about this scenario. The 21-point 11 rebound a game, big man Marvin Bagley, 6'11", 234. Some project him going as early as 2 to Sacramento, but Phoenix threw a wild card in this draft with their first pick, and things have happened differently on the Locked On Podcast Network than's being projected in a lot of different places. Jeremy Wu of Sports Illustrated has done a great job covering the draft all year long for SI.com. He's our NBA draft expert, and he gives his breakdown of Marvin Bagley III.
I'm surprised Bagley fell this far, but you know, I can see the concerns on the defensive side of the ball with him, but there's clearly a lot of talent here. He's a guy who really rebounds the ball well, very natural, you know, instinctive guy on the inside, and really productive. I mean, you can't overlook what he did at Duke as a freshman. It's hard to do that. And I think that ideally he becomes a guy who's a very low maintenance double-double, and there's not a lot of those guys in the NBA anymore who, you know, you roll out there and you know what you're going to get statistically. But yeah, there are defensive concerns in terms of his instincts, who he's going to defend. He's not really long enough to really defend centers. I think the hope with him is that his offensive impact will sort of outweigh whatever it is he's giving up on the other end. But, you know, I could see both ways. I could see Bagley, you know, turning into a guy who can run offense through, or he could be a guy who, you know, puts up these numbers on a team that doesn't win. So I think there's some risk, but also some clear reward in the right spot.
What kind of big do you need next to him?
I think you have to put him next to a rim protector. I think the hope for Bagley, the best case is that he, you know, develops that outside shot, becomes a guy who can play at power forward, where he will have more of an athletic mismatch, whether it's being a little bit bigger and stronger than whoever's guarding him, or being able to, you know, outquick bigger forwards. But I think you want to have a guy who can protect the rim, a guy who will be able to step out and hit a shot so that Bagley has more room to function on the inside.
Well, with Lauri Markkanen as the other youngster the Bulls are building around, with Bagley now at seven, They'll have to go with the model of really scoring. Probably not a lot of great defensive answers there for the Bulls, the way that has been. Interesting to hear what Jake Madison and Josh Lloyd say about that coming up in a few minutes when we check in with them. Right now, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the eighth pick, the much talked about eighth pick. Should they move the eighth pick? Would they, the trade deadline, is that the way to keep LeBron? All of those discussions now come to fruition with the Cleveland Cavaliers on the clock and some interesting players on the board. So let's head over to Chris Manning in the Cleveland Cavaliers draft headquarters.
The Cavs' biggest need in the draft, I think, is just getting good players. They have a very complicated summer coming up. They have a very difficult decision to make on a number of fronts because LeBron James is going to decide their summer. So when you look at the draft, I think they just have to either take that pick and get someone that is going to help them regardless of what happens, or get someone that could be attractive. That is a very fine line to walk, but I do think it is what they have to do. The dream scenario, I think, would be that they get a commitment from LeBron ahead of the draft, and he tells them, I'm staying, let's use that pick to get somebody. That allows them to maybe find Paul, get Paul George to opt into his deal, and they flip that pick to Oklahoma. Zach Lowe has mentioned they could package it with Kevin Love to get something. That is a possibility. I know Cavs fans want CJ McCollum. That certainly will be something I think we'll hear about some, but I think that would be the dream scenario. But I think in a non-LeBron commits world, which he's just not going to do, I think it is getting a player who fits them now, regardless of what happens, and could develop over the long term. The big decision for me is picking between the higher upside pick or something that is more stable. I'll get into this when you hear my pick, but I believe the Cavs' biggest decision is choosing between upside and star potential versus a fixed, more relatively easier to predict quantity. Do you pick a player who could be a star but also has a lower floor, or do you pick someone who is going to be on your next good team regardless of if that guy's a star? At number 8, it's just harder and less likely that you're going to get a star. There are two guys, Michael Porter Jr. and Trae Young, who maybe could be those players that could be available on draft night. One of them is not available in this mock for me, but it is going to be difficult, I think, to get that guy. And it makes me think, is it smarter to just pick the known quantity who there's no injury risk or risk of them just not being an effective player? As far as trade possibilities, I approach this that in a way that I did not look at trades. I said, I'm going to make this pick. I think in the Cavs' actual reality, I find it very hard to believe that they are going to make any deal unless they get a commitment from LeBron. I'd be surprised if they do trade this pick without a commitment from LeBron, just because Dan Gilbert acquired this pick and pushed for this pick as insurance in case LeBron left. They view this guy, in addition to Ante Zizic, Larry Nance, Jetty Osman, etc., as the next step of this franchise if LeBron does leave. They do not want to be left with a barren cupboard if LeBron decides to go to LA or Houston or Philadelphia this summer. So my pick is Mikal Bridges from Villanova. For me, it came down to Michael Porter Jr. from Missouri and Bridges. I went with Mikal Bridges because I believe he is a player who fits either reality the Cavs are facing. If LeBron leaves, they get a wing to have on the wing with Osman, who will be able to shoot threes and defend and play some small ball four, play at a high level, and be part of the next good team and will fit regardless of contracts. The star potential is maybe not there, but he's going to be a solid NBA player, and the Cavs need that. And with him and Osman, you have a big long two and a big long three, and I really like that pairing on my wing. If LeBron stays, option one is he becomes maybe better than Jeff Green right away. He's maybe going to be a better shooter right away, and just should be a piece that fits the more modern style that Cavs sort of need to play. And maybe they could trade him. I mean, this does open up that possibility that you could flip this guy for something else, and you get another player in return. I think that, to me, is one of the logic scenarios here, is just could this guy be traded for something else, because he is something I think other teams would want. And I went with Bridges also over Porter, because Michael Porter has this back injury that limited his college career. Basically, it means we know very little about him. We don't know much about his medicals yet or what the state of that back is going to be. And he could just be a useless NBA player. And that, to me, is a very, very big concern. So for me, I look at Bridges as more of a sure thing. Will fit both my realities, and there's not a downside to him with an injuries. But I like Bridges regardless of what the Cavs are going to have. And I think it's the first move in what's going to be a very interesting summer.
I think I'd like to avoid very interesting if that's what Cleveland's about to embark upon this summer, but who knows? A lot of things can happen between now and early July. Interesting pick there by Chris Manning in Mikal Bridges, because Michael Porter Jr. is supposedly the star in waiting. He's now going to be on the board at 9 for the Knicks. Some people don't see Mikal Bridges as a star, but as a rather as a complimentary piece. Let's hear what Jeremy Wu thinks of the NCAA champion, Mikal Bridges.
Mikal Bridges is a really talented guy who I think views you as an instant impact player who will be able to impact both ends of the floor. I think some of his long-term, I think, potential may have been oversold a little bit. I see him as more of a floor guy than a ceiling guy, given that he's already 21, he'll be 22 in August. And, you know, older guys in the lottery tend to not return lottery value, I think, if history is an indicator. But, you know, he'll be able to hit open threes. Defensively, he'll be able to switch a little bit. I don't view him as a, like, top-end lockdown defender, but I do think the versatility matters. And it's nice that you can sort of superimpose him onto a lot of different teams. You know, teams need wings who can do those things. I think he's justifiable, in the back end of the top 10 if you have that need.
I may have watched the wrong game of his, but I thought I saw a lot of Wesley Johnson. Am I wrong?
I can see that comparison in terms of, the shooting, the versatility, the body, the perimeter game. I think, if you're drafting him that high, you're hoping that, you get a better outcome than that. Maybe you're hoping you get a guy who can sort of play like a, maybe even like a Danny Green type role. But I think he needs to continue, working on his ball handling. Offensive creation, I don't think, will be his strong suit.
Well, with a 8'8" standing reach and a 7'2" wingspan, you'd expect a strong suit for Mikal Bridges to be on the defensive end. But he weighs just 200 pounds right now, so he'll have to bulk up in that area. Michael Porter thought he should have been the number one pick at one point in time. Back injury at Missouri. He's on the board right now, still at 9. A lot of rumors were floating that people could trade up to the Knicks to get this pick, number 9. Also, still trade rumors involving whether or not Charlotte might be able to move 11 and get out of some contracts because of their problems. The Clippers are sitting at 12 with 12 and 13, so trade rumors are circulating everywhere. But coming up next is the Knicks. And this is a war room, a draft headquarters like no other in the Locked On Podcast Network when you touch in on Locked On Knicks. Time, let's go in to the Knicks draft headquarters and see what's taking place and how they'll address the 9th pick of the 2018 Locked On NBA mock draft.
Like Knicks GM Scott Perry said during his year-end press conference, the Knicks' most glaring need is help on the wing. Last year's starter at the 3 was an undersized Tim Hardaway Jr. playing out of position. He acquitted himself admirably when he wasn't battling injury, but it's not a viable long-term solution, especially in light of the reality that the best teams all seem to have multiple long, rangy, switchy wings. Other options on the wing included the undersized and aging Courtney Lee, the defensively underwhelming and offensively inept Lance Thomas, the mercurial Michael Beasley, perhaps better suited to a role as a small ball 4 at this stage of his career, and a laterally quickness-challenged Doug McDermott, who did manage to provide some value before he got shipped out to Dallas as part of the Emmanuel Mudiay trade. Second-round draft pick Damian Dotson could put in some time on the wing, as could everyone's favorite mid-level exception Ron Baker, but neither has the prototypical size or length to succeed there on a regular basis, nor the pedigree to expect them to be much more than marginal contributors. That being said, I agree with Scott Perry when he says that the Knicks are in talent acquisition mode. They're still in the early part of their rebuild, and they're not in a position to turn down a supreme talent if it happens to be at, say, guard, a position where they're fully stocked, but not necessarily with Knicks of the future. I love Frank Ntilikina, probably more than most. I think he's going to be an all-star someday. I think he's a tremendous defender, but that's not anywhere close to being a sure thing, as much as I do love him. But more importantly than that, wondering what Frank Ntilikina is going to do in the future, I've got absolutely no problem fielding a team with multiple ball-handling initiators and facilitators in the starting lineup. I'm less enthusiastic about adding a second big to pair with Kristaps Porzingis in the starting lineup, even with his injury concerns. Because in my ideal world, the Knicks are a little more spry, a little more switchy, and a little more modern than a too big lineup allows you to be, I have a hard time envisioning a fellow big helping KP defend 4 and 5 out lineups, but I'll say this, for the right talent, I'll consider it. Now, my dream scenario would be somehow landing Luka Doncic, but that's not going to happen. Even if he stays on the board way longer than he should, he's not fallen to 9, and in our draft, I think we've got him properly rated as the top overall prospect. Shouts to you, Locked On Suns, you guys nailed it! Now, outside of Luka Doncic, there's not a prospect whose skills I trust more than Trae Young. Knicks fans rightfully question his suspect defense. We've dealt with poor defense at the point guard position, at the point of attack, for what feels like decades now, but I'd love it if we could grab Young and bring his elite shooting and playmaking abilities to the Knicks. He figures to stretch defenses as much or more than anyone in this draft, with his unlimited range off the dribble and pinpoint passing ability. And besides, pairing him with Frank Ntilikina, he of the 7-foot wingspan and lockdown pick-and-roll defense, would be a perfect situation to maximize his strengths and minimize his weaknesses. Unfortunately for me, Locked On Memphis made the bold call of adding Trae Young to a backcourt already containing Mike Conley, but hey, shouts to you, Locked On Memphis, I respect the vision there. Now, Mikal Bridges would have been a perfect fit for the Knicks too. He's got excellent size and fantastic reach for a wing. His defense is solid guarding 1 through 3, maybe even a touch of 4. He's a knockdown shooter, an elite finisher at the rim, and he's shown himself to be a high IQ player on both sides of the ball with an ability to massively improve his game, even if he is on the older side for a lottery prospect. I have such an easy time picturing him forming a top 10, top 5 even defense with KP and Frank, and doing all the little things on offense to help make the Knicks a well-rounded attack, that it really hurts when Cleveland makes the safe play and nabs him one spot ahead of me. You guys gotta swing for the fences. Come on, Cleveland. LeBron's leaving. What are you doing here? Which brings me to my selection. When I look at who's available, I feel like I have no other option but to pull the trigger on Michael Porter Jr. Yes, I'm concerned about his back, but in this scenario, we don't have access to his medicals, so I'm going to go right ahead and assume he's fine. Fingers crossed, right? And yes, I'm concerned about his basketball IQ. In many ways, I hate that I'm making this pick. I'm going to be honest with you guys. However, when you look at his pre-injury tape, it's obvious that he's got the ability to be a Durant-esque scorer. Now, am I saying he'll have that efficiency? No. That would make him a top 10 player of all time. But that's the mold you're looking at. You're looking at a game-breaking mold on the offensive end. A 6'10", 6'11", maybe shot maker who can hezzy pull up Jimbo with the best of them, Michael Porter Jr. is a remarkably fluid athlete for his size and has way too much upside to pass up for the likes of Miles Bridges and Kevin Knox. I could not, in good faith, look you in the eye or speak to you in your ear holes and tell you I think Miles Bridges, Kevin Knox, Zaire Smith, or even Lonnie Walker are the same caliber prospect as Michael Porter Jr. I just can't do it. I like a lot of those guys. I mean, look, any one of them could wind up being a better player than Porter. That's not impossible. And personally, I would have traded down from 9 if I could have picked up multiple first-round picks, say the Clippers' 12th and 13th selections. Unfortunately for me, those options were not on the table. And since the Knicks are still in the talent acquisition phase, I choose to select the guy who, to my mind, has by far the highest upside, the highest ceiling of anyone available to me at 9. Michael Porter Jr., welcome to the Knicks.
And James has the crowd rocking. I mean, Knicks fans are hallelujahing after James's rendition of Inside the Knicks Draft Headquarters. He's got him going. People threw him some curveballs, but he went Michael Porter. What does Jeremy Wu think of Michael Porter?
Michael Porter is one of the biggest wild cards in this draft. The talent is clearly there. He was in the mix for the number one pick before he got hurt. I think that, you know, wherever he goes, whether it's, you know, closer to the back of the top 10 or if someone decides to take a chance top 5, I mean, he'll have a chance to return value just based on how easily the game comes to him. When you're his size and can shoot it and can put it on the ground and score, clearly, that's a guy who has potential to, you know, be a big help to a team. But I think there's a lot of reason for concern as well. I think teams have not been very impressed with interviews. The background on him, whether he's a good teammate, whether he is mature enough to you know, adjust to the NBA quickly, I think, a fair question. And remember, he barely has played any college basketball. So I think he'll face an adjustment, and I think the health will be a concern. But it's a worthwhile game of talent if you have that that ability to take the risk.
What is the talent that would have made him the number one pick?
Well, you look at him, you know, he's, what, 6'10", 6'11", you know, legitimately a good three-point shooter, a guy with a natural jumper. And, you know, guys like that are, you know, the biggest matchup problems in the NBA. You know, I'm not saying he's Kevin Durant. No one, I don't think anyone thinks that he's Kevin Durant. But, you know, guys in that mold, I mean, you can look at Brandon Ingram, why he was a high draft pick. You know, when you're tall and can shoot and you put it on the ground, you know, that's clearly a skill set that sort of has outlines of somebody who could anchor an offense. Now, the question is whether he'll be able to do it. But I think that is the hope if you are going to have him be a on the front lines of your team.
Michael Porter Jr. in New York. That should certainly be interesting. We're 9 picks in episode 1 or mock draft number 1. Luka Doncic went number 1. DeAndre Ayton went 2. Jaren Jackson 3. Trae Young jumped to 4 to Memphis, who went for the scorer. Mo Bamba at 5 to Dallas, and Wendell Carter, a bit of a surprise, to Orlando at 6, leaving Marvin Bagley today in the 7th pick for Chicago. Mikal Bridges went 8 to Cleveland, and Michael Porter Jr. goes 9. The Philadelphia 76ers are on the clock, but first, let's head over to Locked On NBA host Josh Lloyd, who you get every single Monday doing the local experts on the biggest stories, and Jake Madison, who's joined on Wednesdays by John Corrales, to see what they think of what's taken place so far in the first 3 picks of today's edition of the Locked On NBA Mock Draft. And remember, an AMA, Reddit NBA AMA at 2 o'clock Eastern today. Let's go back over to Josh and Jake and see what their take on things are.
Thanks, David. Jake, I guess some players here in these 3 picks that we expected to be going, maybe some of them a little bit earlier with Marvin Bagley going to Chicago there at pick 7, Mikal Bridges going to pick 8, and Michael Porter Jr. I think we could expect Bagley and Porter to go higher than that in a real-life scenario. So Chicago and New York must be feeling pretty happy. But Bagley's an interesting one with his offensive ability, but you know, the defensive stuff from Bagley can be a real struggle. And I've gone through and analyzed a bunch of these prospects, over 160 different guys in terms of statistical translations. And Bagley doesn't really come out that well due to his defensive liabilities. But do you think that's still a good pick for Chicago there?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a value pick because I've seen him mocked in the top 4 of certain things. So you could see him going up there. So at 7, it's kind of a no-brainer just to take best available player on the board, and he might be. You know, he does have those defensive liabilities, but he should contribute right away. He's a strong rebounder. Yeah, he's raw, but Chicago's kind of in a weird spot where maybe they want to compete right again if they use their cap space right away. So if you can get a guy in the top 7 who's going to get in your rotation, I think that's a good thing for him.
Then you've got Mikal Bridges, the older of the two Bridges guys, not that they're related, but often there'll be confusion between those two guys, going to Cleveland out of Villanova. I guess Cleveland is probably expecting LeBron James not to be back with the team next season. Bridges is a guy that fits what the NBA needs, you know, 3-and-D type defensive wings that can provide that switchability, can knock down shots. And you know, while some might say it is a little bit high for that selection, given where the NBA is going and what teams are looking for, it's hard to fault that too much, even though the upside of Porter, who went 1 pick later, is probably a little bit more appealing.
Yeah, that's my take on it. Is I would have, if I were Cleveland, in my personal opinion, I probably would have taken Michael Porter Jr. there. And I think if you're trying to sell LeBron on staying, that's the better idea to go with, because that's a guy who can maybe take some of the load off of him immediately versus Bridges, who's gonna, you know, who can create his own shot as a weakness for him, but he does space the court well, which is a strength. And I think that's not exactly what LeBron wants. So I'm looking at it from that lens. But again, you know, when you look at these guys at these positions that are of high value, that's something you do need to keep in mind, positional scarcity, and Mikal Bridges fits right into that.
And there's really not much to say about the Knicks pick, Michael Porter Jr. sliding all the way down to number 9. The Knicks just need someone with upside to pair with a guy like Porzingis. So I think that's the smart pick there for them. No one else that was really remaining on the board would make me go, oh, I wish they had taken them over Porter.
No, that's a no-brainer. I have my notes in front of me, and it just says, love it. That's the right pick.
Thanks, guys. And if you want more fantasy, mock draft, go to Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Josh had two great conversations. One with Sam Vecenie and the other with Cole Zwicker, both extended draft podcasts that came out on June 13th. So check those out over at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. The 10th pick of the NBA draft is now on the clock. The Philadelphia 76ers, after their incredible run, will they get Paul George? Will they get LeBron? But first, they can add talent at 10. Charlotte is behind them at 11. And the Clippers are sitting with 12 and 13, but in the midst of major trade talks. Let's go out to Philadelphia, NBA Draft Headquarters.
Hello, I'm Keith Pompey. I'm your Locked On 76ers host. You made it down to the 10th pick. For the Sixers, the Sixers are a team that's a little different than in years past. And what I mean by that is they have different draft needs. In the previous four, five seasons, the Sixers had to go after a guy who they felt like was going to have to be a franchise player for them. That's not the case right now. You know, right now the Sixers have Joel Embiid, they have Ben Simmons, they have Dario Saric, and they have Markel Fultz, who they drafted first overall. Right now, Markel, you know, we're still trying to find out, you know, what he can be. He only played 14 games last year. That's another story. But the Sixers' biggest needs this offseason is to get an A-list free agent. So, in order to get that or trade for someone. So, right now, the draft, as important as it is to get a quality person, they're not going looking at someone who's going to alter the franchise. They are looking at someone who can fit in well with the players. So the dream scenario for the 76ers in the draft is getting depth at the wing position. They want a guy who can, you know, who can play the three, may, and on occasion, if have to, he can slide over to the four when they go small ball. You know, someone that doesn't have to be a stud. You know, someone who can just fit into their system. The decision that the 76ers had to make was, hey, do we trade for Kawhi? Do we give up the 10th pick and trade for Kawhi Leonard? You know, we can get Kawhi from the San Antonio Spurs for the 10th pick, possibly Markel Fultz, who I talked about who's the first overall pick, and Robinson. But the Sixers opted not to do that, right? The reason they opted not to do that is because, hey, Brian Colangelo is no longer the general manager. They have Brett Brown, the head coach, acting as the acting manager. And they just decided to part in free agency. Also, San Antonio wasn't really willing to bite on the trade. So, with the 10th pick, the 76ers have decided to take Kevin Knox out of Kentucky. At 6'9", 215 pounds, he is a small forward, power forward. That's what he projects to play on the next level, right? He's a guy from Tampa, Florida. You know, he's a good player. You know, he's 6'9". He has, you know, 7.14% body fat, so he's in pretty good shape. He has a 7'1¼ wingspan. So he has long arms that's going to enable him to fit in well with Brett Brown's system. Brett Brown likes guys to be defensive, use their their arms, get deflections, the whole nine. Right? He has solid mechanics that should relate and translate well to the next level. He already has NBA range. Now, that's key for the Sixers because the Sixers are a team that rely heavily on analytics. They like shooting a lot of threes. They get layups. And see, the thing is, this offseason, they're going to go hard after LeBron James. So you have a guy like Knox who can come in. He can learn off of LeBron James. He can play defense. He'll do all the other little things. And for the Sixers, this is a guy who they feel like can be a value pick, a guy who right now there's not a lot going to be asked of him. He'll be in a rotation, but they hope that he can develop down the road, and then in a couple years, he can step in and be the guy. Now, again, he's not going to be the man on the 76ers, but he can be a guy that they can depend on, right? So with the 10th pick, the Sixers are going to select Kevin Knox, right? They're all going to tell you that he is the guy that they coveted. You know, he is. He's a good guy, long athletic. But the thing about it is, you know, they're drafting him because Mikal Bridges is off the board, the guy from Villanova, who would have helped out tremendously. But they like Knox over Miles Bridges. So here, you know, so this should be a pretty good, you know, scenario for him. He's not the guy who they coveted, but he's a good guy with a huge upside. Thank you, and have a great day.
Philadelphia front office in turmoil. If that Kawhi Leonard deal was really on the table, shouldn't the Sixers have done that deal? Isn't that the piece to that puzzle that changes who they are? It'd be interesting to see over time how they look back on that decision to not make the deal that Keith mentioned right there. Remarkable. Big story out of Philadelphia. Keith covers the team for the Philadelphia Inquirer and also on Locked On Sixers. Jeremy Wu gives us the breakdown of the kid out of Kentucky, Kevin Knox.
I think Kevin Knox is a guy, an example of, you know, year after year we see guys at Kentucky who can do more than they show in their roles. But, you know, every year, you know, John Calipari had so much talent that he sort of has to fit the parts in. And, you know, Devin Booker is the prime example where he fell sort of outside the top 10, was mostly a spot-up guy at Kentucky. And then clearly you got to Phoenix and showed he can do more. So I'm not comparing the two. I think that Knox is a guy who also can do more than he showed in terms of putting the ball on the ground. You know, Kentucky didn't ask him to do too many complicated things. You know, he was focusing more on spotting up, you know, creating secondary opportunities in the wing, shooting threes. And I think he has definitely improved his perimeter game. And, you know, you're taking him, I think, with hopes that he becomes, you know, a guy who will be able to play both forward spots in, you know, two or three years from now. But not just a, really a baby. I mean, I think he has a lot of development left. And the hope is, you know, he'll go somewhere that will, you know, give him the attention that he needs to sort of become a starting caliber forward.
Knox at 6'9", 213 pounds. His wingspan's nothing crazy. It's a little under 7 feet, but he averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds on that loaded team. Very good around the rim. Some people think he's a Tobias Harris. That was a reference that the Ringer put out there as a possibility for him. That would be a heck of a pickup for Philadelphia, and you could hear that there's a real chance in the minds of Jeremy Wu that Kevin Knox could turn into quite a player. So we are 4 picks in on day 2 of our NBA mock draft. Remember, there'll be a Reddit AMA at 2 o'clock Eastern each and every day of our mock draft with the host that made the picks. You can find out what New York thought, what Cleveland thought about their picks, and we have coming up still Charlotte, the Clippers, and Dallas. And the word I'm getting is, despite Utah's efforts to try to trade up in the draft to get Marvin Williams and swap picks, take the Marvin Williams contract and swap picks, that may have fallen short. And Charlotte is, in fact, going to be on the clock coming up in just a second. And we are now getting some news that Dallas and the Clippers are very close to a deal where Dallas is going to get back in, taking one of those 2 Clipper picks that's coming up here in a minute. We'll see if we get the details on it. But let's go now over to Charlotte, North Carolina, and head into their NBA draft headquarters.
Hello from beautiful uptown Charlotte. I'm Doug Branson from Locked On Hornets. We've got you covered every week with your Charlotte Hornets news and analysis. Right now, we're doing our top 30 Charlotte Hornets of all time in honor of the 30th anniversary of the team, plus our top 30 Charlotte beers of all time. So check us out on Locked On Hornets. But today we're here to talk about the draft, and our biggest draft need coming into this draft period is talent and cap space. Now, there are a couple of minor needs, including two-way play, athleticism, and a fun factor, to be completely honest. Short term, they haven't even had a below average backup point guard option since Jeremy Lin was on the team, so you could count that as another need as well. Now, in terms of a dream scenario for this team, I think Mikal Bridges somehow slipping to the 11th slot would probably count as a dream scenario, because I think, and I know Walker, my co-host, thinks that that Mikal is someone who would perfectly fit here in Charlotte. The other dream scenario, at least in my mind, is finding a team willing to take a major contract like Nick Batum or Dwight Howard in exchange for major cap relief. Now, I'm still hesitant to give up so quickly on Nick Batum, but if they want to get better in a short period of time, it would be a lot easier to do that if they could unleash the full power of Mitch Kupchak, their new general manager, on the free agent market. Now, the big decision coming into this mock draft for us was use the pick or trade down and try to find some of that cap relief. Now, some players that Walker and I had been playing around with included Lonnie Walker from Miami, included Shai Gilgeous-Alexander from Kentucky. Again, that would fill that backup point guard position. Colin Sexton as well for the backup point guard position. And Miles Bridges, someone who has been mocked to the Charlotte Hornets a lot. A good two-way player option. But Walker was really hesitant about Miles Bridges and his ability to play defense in the NBA. So we did have some trade possibilities as well to factor in. Locked On Mavs contacted us about a possible trade option, but the serious trades came from David Locke and Locked On Jazz, who offered us several deals for in exchange for Marvin Williams to get that kind of cap relief. Now, David Locke offered us three contracts that were all non-guaranteed: Cephalosha, Udo, and Jonas Jerebko. So all those contracts could have come off the Charlotte Hornets books next season, offering them serious cap relief. And we had to take that offer seriously. But ultimately, we decided that the Charlotte Hornets needed talent. And there was one player in particular that we really liked the potential of and thought could be a home run swing in this draft. And that was Lonnie Walker, the fourth out of Miami. So we made him the 11th overall pick. And there were a couple of things we liked about Lonnie. First, his potential as a shooter. His defense is ready to go right away in the NBA. A lot of scouts are talking about how great his defense is and what they've seen from him in these workouts. And then me personally, I just love how explosive of an athlete he is. It's something that the Charlotte Hornets desperately need, in my opinion. And the way he attacks the basket reminds me of someone that currently David Locke is getting the services of. And that is one, Donovan Mitchell. And that's why Walker and I both were in agreement that Lonnie Walker should be a member of the Charlotte Hornets. So that's the draft update from Locked On Hornets. Again, make sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Hornets, where we are breaking down the 30 best Charlotte Hornets of all time and the 30 best Charlotte beers of all time. So even if you're not a fan of the Charlotte Hornets and you're visiting Charlotte soon, you might want to check out the podcast so you can see what tasty beverages are available here in the Queen City. All right, thanks for listening. This is Doug Branson, Locked On Hornets.
Turning down those trade offers might have them drinking a lot of beers after all that. I don't know. Maybe they got the right guy in Lonnie Walker. Turns out that some of the trade deals that we talked about actually didn't work in the cap as well as one. It wouldn't have given them quite the amount of relief. They talk with Dallas. Dallas finally sounds like Dallas is going to get back in another spot. So things really moving here in this mock draft. Lonnie Walker going 11 to Charlotte. Kevin Knox, 10 to Philadelphia. New York took Michael Porter Jr. Mikal Bridges, 8 to Cleveland. And Marvin Bagley went 7. Let's check in with Jeremy Wu and see what he thinks of Lonnie Walker.
Lonnie Walker is viewed as an upside guy. Wherever it is he goes in the lottery, I think, you know, the athletic ability is clearly there. You know, he gets a lot of hang time when he's attacking the basket. You know, he's capable of these athletic plays that not a lot of people can make. And anytime you have that going for you, you know, you're going to be viewed very seriously as a prospect. You know, he can shoot the three, you know, he can get to the paint. I think competed defensively more often than not. I think there's still some questions. You know, he needs to become a better defender, but the hope is that he'll play both ends of the floor and give you a lot of value. The concern I have with Walker is just his feel. You know, I don't know how natural he is in terms of scoring, you know, in ways other than getting into the basket. And, you know, I worry that, you know, when you throw him in there against, you know, more athletic defenders, guys who can match up with him better, that he might have trouble creating his own shot, and which is going to be an important skill for him. But, you know, there's a lot of upside, and I think he is worth a gamble.
That last word right there from Jeremy Wu really sums up where he feels about that, a gamble. No question. He only averaged 11.5 points a game in Miami. He does have that Donovan Mitchell comparison because he's 6'4.5 with a 6'10.25 wingspan, and so he's got that. But Donovan Mitchell in his last half of the season, the ACC, was averaging about 18 points a game at Louisville, showing the prowess that then ended up being the scoring touch that he had. I'm not sure Lonnie Walker has shown that yet in his career. Did have a knee surgery in 2017. You always worry about that. He's only 19.5 years old, though, so he is a youngster. The Clippers are on the clock. They have back-to-back picks in the draft. It's the last pick of our day two mock draft. Remember, Reddit at AMA today at 2 o'clock Eastern. Let's go to the Clippers NBA draft headquarters and Connor Varney.
Thank you, David, and welcome into the Clippers War Room here on the Locked On NBA mock draft. We are on the clock with pick number 12, and I think first we have to look at our roster and see really what our points of need are. The Clippers are in an interesting place because they have a lot of solid players and good players spread across different positions, but I wouldn't say anyone good enough to dissuade us from taking who we think is the best player available. We have Lou Williams in the backcourt. We have Patrick Beverley coming back from microfracture surgery. We might bring Teodosic back. We have a non-guarantee on him. He has a player option. And then we also have DeAndre Jordan maybe coming back at center. He could opt into his player option, or we could bring him back on a new deal. But that's about it as far as our core guys to consider when making this decision. So we're here at 12. There's a number of intriguing guys available, and let's look at who this decision comes down to. I think the first guy we need to look at is Miles Bridges. The fact that he's slipped this far, he kind of intrigues us. He is a forward. He plays a lot like Tobias Harris, which might be a little duplicative, but he's a good finisher, and we think he'd be a good fit next to him. Another guy we could consider is Robert Williams, who would be a nice short-term or long-term replacement for DeAndre, depending on what happens with his contract situation. Robert Williams can be the dunker. He can run to the rim, block shots. We're just a little concerned. He doesn't really have a reliable jump shot. His screen setting isn't great, and his effort levels are questionable. And the other place we can look here is in the backcourt, and for a point guard to be our long-term solution there. Beverley only has 1 year left on his deal. Teodosic, if he comes back, has 1 year. And so there's a couple guys that intrigue us. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the 6'6 point guard out of Kentucky. He has great length, defense, passing, and he would be a really nice fit on our roster. The other guy is Colin Sexton, who's the relentless attacker on the shorter side at 6'1, but he can get to the rim and break down defenses, and that's something attractive to us. So when we consider all of this, what do we think is the best? And for us, the pick we're going to make is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander out of Kentucky. Now, why? Why did we pick him? The first reason is he's perfect to fit with anyone in our backcourt, and he's an ideal complement for Lou Williams. Lou can handle a lot of the ball handling or some of the ball handling. He can do a lot of the scoring, and then he can guard the worst of the two opposing guards. Shai can take the better one of those. He can handle the ball, defend really well. And we even see him as a guy that might be able to guard 1 through 3 in the future. He just needs to get stronger. Also, you know, he complements Teodosic and Patrick Beverley well, and we think he's a nice long-term prospect. Robert Williams, you know, he's a little too unreliable for us, and we think there's a high possibility that DeAndre comes back with the impacted cap situation in the league. Tobias Harris and Miles Bridges are really similar players, and we, frankly, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander better than all the other players available. So that is our pick here. Back to you, David.
Well, Connor sure made a lot of sense there out of the Clippers war room. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is off the board. Let's hear what Jeremy Wu has to say about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Gilgeous-Alexander was one of the most interesting players to watch over the course of the season, just with the way that he changed from November to March. You know, he looked out of place at Kentucky throughout the year. You know, didn't look like he really knew what he was doing. He did not look confident. And then, you know, by March, he's Kentucky's best player. And, you know, I think that that growth is something scouts like to see. You know, he has a very interesting skill set at his size as a 6'5", 6'6", lead ball handler, you know, can make an open shot, has good passing instincts, has a pretty good feel for the game. And I think that you can play him with a number of different types of guards, you know, because he's defensive minded, he has good hands, you know, he'll be opportunistic defensively. So you could either play him with, you know, a smaller guard who likes to score. You can play him with another big guard and, you know, have a taller backcourt. I think that, you know, that versatility is going to be appealing to teams. You know, I think there's some risk involved if he doesn't become a confident jump shooter, and if he sort of regresses back to sort of, you know, the less aggressive version of himself. But I think that, you know, again, he's going to be on the range of the draft where, you know, you tend to be taking flyers on upside, and I think he definitely has it.
Is he your most likely to be the mid-round surprise?
I can see it happening. You know, I think if you're looking at this part of the draft and in that range this year, I don't know if there are any guys who were Donovan Mitchells, right? I don't expect these guys to really be instant impact players. But I do think he will have a chance in 2 or 3 years to be very good. And a guy where you look at him and you're like, you know, why wasn't he a top 10 pick?
So 6 more picks are in on the draft. We are at pick number 12. Heavy trade rumors still circulating around the Clippers making a move with a 13th pick. We'll find out about that on tomorrow's show. The 7th pick was Marvin Bagley to Chicago. The 8th pick was Mikal Bridges to Cleveland. And 9th was Michael Porter Jr. Philadelphia with the big news about the possibility of the Kawhi Leonard trade, but also then drafted Kevin Knox. Lonnie Walker went 11 to Charlotte, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander just went 12 to the Clippers. Dallas, Denver, Washington, Phoenix, Milwaukee, and San Antonio are on the docket for tomorrow's episode. But first, let's go back over to the guys. Josh Lloyd hosts the Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the local experts on the biggest stories, as well as his great show, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. And Jake Madison and John Corrales combine Wednesdays for Locked On NBA. Let's go back over to J&J. It's Josh and Jake.
Thanks a lot, David. Jake, we're back to look at the next trio of picks, and I think Philadelphia's thrown probably the biggest spanner in the works here with the Kevin Knox selection. He is a guy that, and this is something that with all these Kentucky players, so many guys coming into the NBA out of Kentucky seem to show more in the NBA than they did while they were at college due to the way the system runs in Kentucky. But Knox, it feels a bit early to me for him to be going there. You can talk about drafting best player available versus need, but there's so many fours and big men in Philadelphia already. I'm not certain of this pick, especially when there are other guards who might have been better or other guys who could have fit into that rotation a little bit easier.
Yeah, you know, I think this is high, but Knox has been shooting up draft boards over the past couple of weeks as he's been getting these workouts and the combine numbers and everything. So he's very raw offensively. I don't know if he quite fits their timeline either, but this is kind of a boom or bust pick for Philly. And in my opinion, they're playing a little bit with house money. You've got a lot of young talent in there that you can kind of afford maybe to take this gamble at 10 that another team wouldn't be able to, but make no doubt about it, it's certainly a gamble.
Then you've got Lonnie Walker, the 4th, going to the Charlotte Hornets at pick 11. Charlotte needs offensive creators. Obviously, there's Kemba Walker, but who knows how long he's going to be around. Malik Monk struggled for most of last season, came on in the last month or so of the season. Walker is a guy that, I don't know, he's a tough one. He doesn't seem to do much apart from scoring, but maybe that's all the Hornets need for this coming season.
Yeah, this one's a little bit weird. Look, I am all about the all Walker backcourt right now, but if they're going for a rebuild, he's got a ton of upside to do that, but I don't know if they're actually going for a rebuild. So maybe you look for someone who's a little bit more NBA ready or more well-rounded. He can get to the rim. He's got potential to be a shooter, but he's not there yet. So maybe that does pair kind of well with Kemba Walker in the backcourt, but still does leave there's a couple questions about this one.
Yeah, I think there are other guys on the board that I would have taken in that specific situation, but getting someone who can create shots and hopefully be a pretty decent scorer is always worth a look. And then we've got the LA Clippers choosing another Kentucky player, again, giving the benefit of the doubt to Kentucky players, is a good thing to do given how we've seen a lot of them take their games to new levels in the NBA, and that's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a quite long point guard who did struggle a little bit in college with his offense, but I think that he has got a legitimate chance to be the best point guard in this draft, and it's I can't really fault too much there, even with Miles Bridges still on the board.
See, I actually don't like this pick that much. You know, he's got good size to match up on the wing, and he can move the ball, which is always going to be a needed thing. But is he the best fit for their backcourt? Is maybe they need more of a score when you look at who they're kind of running out there. And, you know, look, I'm not throwing much faith in Austin Rivers or anything here, but if you try and pair him next to Theodosic or something like that, maybe you need more of a go-to score, not a pass or something like that. So I wonder where some of their scoring is going to come from. But again, it's these Kentucky guys that show off a ton of talent and ability, and we know they do better in the NBA. So you're willing to give them a benefit of the doubt, but again, I have questions on this one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it pairs out. I just think that the Clippers look at Patrick Beverley and Teodosic and even Austin Rivers as guys who are not going to be part of the next really good Clippers team. They're all older than I think many people would expect, especially Patrick Beverley. So I think they're not really paying too much attention to that. But look, it is, and when we're into this zone of the draft, there can be some discussion. I'm not sure which way it's going to go, but I do like taking that upside from Kentucky with a long guard as well, who does have, I believe, some offensive upside there.
Great discussion there from the JJs, Josh and Jake. I got to tell you, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, super interesting to me. 14 points a game, 4 rebounds and 5 assists. Didn't play a great deal because he was at Kentucky with all the other kids. 6'6", 180, 6'11 and a half wingspan, 8'8 standing reach, and plays hard. That is an important skill that I don't think we talk about enough. He plays hard. He's not a superstar athlete, but he's got a superstar body. He probably is not a pure one, but at 6'6", he's probably playing multiple positions. He can handle and pick and roll. I like him. I think this is a guy that could really turn out to be the mid-range surprise of this draft. We'll be back with you in episode number 3 on Friday's edition. That will have, of course, for you, the picks 13 through 18. And remember, a Reddit AMA at 2 o'clock Eastern at the NBA Reddit. Please join us for conversation about the draft there with a host who just made the picks. And that even includes the Locked On Knicks guy. He's nuts. All right, that is Locked On Podcast Network Mock Draft, day number 2. For all the latest, go to LockedOnSports.com.